So you're an instructor at Kalamazoo College?
Yes, I am. That's one of the things I do.
But I've been told that you, for many years, have been teaching all ages, all different skill levels. What is that like going from so many different kinds of people, so many different levels of expertise and teaching those people?
Well, it's amazing actually, because I learned so much. I started teaching Suzuki students, very young students, how to improvise. And that challenge of trying to bring it down and get it as simple as I could, was very, very revealing to me. And I've been on a constant journey of trying to simplify how to teach people to improvise, as adults as well as young children. And it just keeps evolving for me.
So, what is the challenge there in trying to improvise when it's something that perhaps you've never done before?
The challenge basically is to get off the written page of music and to be able to play without looking at music. Even though there may be some written music involved, you're still having to create something that's not on the page. So there's, it's just kind of a psychological thing. I always tell my students, remember when you tried to ride a two-wheel bike? Were you able to do it? You couldn't balance. But once you get it, you get it. So there are things that you can teach for improvisation that are givens that you have to learn to be able to improvise. There are certain skills that are very teachable.
Now, this is a very big question, but I'm going to see if you can answer it. How did you become a jazz musician?
Well, let's see. I was playing accordion, which was my first instrument, for 5 years. And I tried out for the High School of Music and Art in New York City. And I played a Chopin impromptu on the accordion. And they said to me, "Sorry, we don't have a place for that instrument in this school." So that was one of my many rejections in life. So, at that same time, I got my father and my mother, who happened to be divorced when we were very young, which was unheard of back in an Italian family back in those days. However, my dad always kept in contact, and he was very involved in my music because he played the saxophone and the bass, and he helped me with my accordion to form a band, a three-piece band, accordion, bass, and guitar, and got us some work actually in the Catskill Mountains. So I had my first group when I was 14. Trio that I arranged all the music for, and did that for quite a few years. And then my dad took me to hear Dave Brubeck live at Carnegie Hall. And I was sitting in basically the front row, and I can see Dave Brubeck's feet because it was eye level. And anyway, I was 16, and I left that concert, and I came home and said to my mom, "Mom, I've got to play piano." And at 16, I switched to piano and started playing jazz.
So, you play many different styles of jazz as both an instructor and a musician yourself. What would you say is the most, where you feel the most comfortable?
The most comfortable is in performing my own compositions. I played lots of standards over the years, and I can hold my own playing standards. But when you have someone like Keith Jarrett and Chick Corea, what they can do with standards, it's like, that's great. And, I don't want to put my energy into that. I want to put my energy into composing and trying to create something that really appeals to me and that I can relate to other musicians with.
Now, you actually put your compositions online for free. Do you think that's kind of brave to do that? Why did you make that decision?
Well, again, I want to get stuff out there. I have so much music that, if somebody maybe would like to purchase some music eventually, that would be great. I'm not real familiar with the internet, even though I've got a website and I put two of my books for sale, and I have sold a few copies. But I don't know how all that's going to work in the future. But I think I need a publisher that, besides my own publishing company, that publishes my own music. I'm self-published, so it's free because I want to get it out there, I guess.
Now, let's talk about a few of your albums, specifically Appassionato, which you call solo piano, impressionistic, non-improvised jazz, influenced compositions filled with passion and sensitivity. So non-improvised jazz, let's start there. What do you mean by that?
Okay. We got to look at the composers of the past to think about improvisation. First of all, we know Bach and Mozart were fantastic improvisers. Okay, so the point is this, is that when I sit down and I improvise, I'm improvising. As soon as I pick up the pencil and notate that, it is a composition. So what I'm doing is I'm improvising and jotting down, improvising, jotting down. So at that point in time, it's, again, not improvised. So because I'm going to repeat what I've written down. So that becomes a composition. So it's improvised flavor, and in some of the styles and harmonies that I use in jazz becomes a non-improvised composition.
So talk a little about the feel of that album a little bit.
That was a big project. My dad passed away, and I wanted to do something for him, really, because of my love for him. And I wanted to document that, and I decided to do a Appassionato, which is an Italian suite, and it has all Italian titles. And it was a 2-year project, composing and recording it. And it was a little bit of a challenge for me to record that because of the difficulty of some of the pieces. And, you know, again, being self-taught in terms of composition, and even though I did have 1 year of piano, classical piano training, when I started when I was 16. And then I had a year of jazz piano with the legendary Lenny Tristano, which was an amazing thing for me. But from there, I took out, you know, just playing a lot of Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, and Hindemith, just reading different music and studying on my own and translating all of that, digesting all of that, and spitting it out as my own composition.
So it seems a lot more, it's interesting that you say that you kind of wrote that for your dad, because it does seem a lot more soulful and a lot more deep, I guess, than some of your other, I guess, less upbeat than some of your other works, but still, you know, very, very passionate, though, you know, as the title implies.
That's it. I mean, it was a serious project, and I spent a lot of time writing the music and recording it, and it's there, and it's available in print, so anybody that wanted to play one of those pieces could. So that's one of my books that I have available, Appassionato.
So do you have a favorite piece from that recording?
I like Primavera quite a bit.
Why is that?
Because it really combines some very impressionistic stuff that I like from, you know, Ravel and Debussy. And then it goes into kind of, a really nice melodic, very simple theme that would be almost, I don't want to say new age, but yeah, it has new age influence and some jazz influence as well.
Would you say classical composers have a lot of influence on your work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Bach especially is Bach keeps you humble. You know, you play Bach and you're exposed, you know, and trying to get the piano to really sound good, you know, and I love Debussy, of course, and Scarlatti, and Mozart. I mean, it goes on, you know.
Oh, and talk a little bit about Essence of Green, a tribute to Kind of Blue, which is your another recording of yours.
Again, you know, growing up, you listen to this music. I'll never forget, I was living in Brooklyn, and I saw the RCA ad, you know, buy 10 jazz albums for 15 cents or something, you know. So I joined the club, you know, and I had these albums sent to my house. And one of the albums was Charlie Mingus' Tijuana Moods. And I put it on, and I just had to put it away. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't listen to it. I put it away for quite a few years, actually. But I also did get a classical CD in that bunch, Hindus, Hindemith's Mathis de Mahler, which was amazing symphony stuff. That was great. And Kind of Blue is another one I've got. And now that one I gravitated towards immediately. Probably because Bill Evans was on there. And Bill Evans, of course, I'm not the only pianist that has been influenced by Bill Evans. He has influenced every great pianist ever since he's played the piano. I mean, Keith Jarrett, Chick Corea, Billy Childs, they all draw inspiration from Bill's harmonies. And his what he did was bring to jazz the harmony of Ravel and the Impressionists and combine it. He was a big force with Miles Davis in creating modal jazz, which was a very integral part.
Can you explain what modal jazz?
Yeah, modal jazz is very simply, I mean, you know, we have our major scale, and within the major scale lie all the modes, the seven modes of music, okay? And just for instance, the mode built on the second degree is the Dorian mode, which they use quite a bit in Kind of Blue. So you would just take that modal passage and maybe a simple progression of the 2-5 chord, and you just play on that. So you're actually using the notes in C major, of course. We'd be talking using the notes from C major, however, built on the D minor 7th. So now we have a minor sound. See the thing that I try to get my students to get is that all of the modes of the major scale have three major sounding modes and three minor sounding modes. So you have major and minor combined together, which brings about something that I've been working on for the last 7 years is my delta diatonics, which actually create a new music system of harmony that combines classical and jazz using a chord symbology that would transcend the current chord symbology and get us into a universal symbology that would work through any language.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about the delta diatonics. You know, how is this really instructing? How does the instruction work here, I guess?
Well, it's so simple that it's kind of scary. In other words, hey, how come we didn't think of this, or somebody would say that? In other words, very simply, I use four symbols that are used in music already. The delta triangle is used in jazz. However, they use it in conjunction with the letters MA, J, or MA for major, and then they also use the numeral 7. So in other words, a typical chord symbol might say C, MA with a triangle and 7. Well, the thing that I've come up with based on Arnold Schoenberg's theory of harmony is that the dominant chord is so essential. It's so essential because the dominant pushes us into a major region or a minor region. So I use that where he said that based on the potency of the dominant, we go to a major or minor region. So I applied that to jazz. In other words, jazz, they have sevens for major seventh, seventh, a number seven for minor seventh, seven for dominant seventh. So I said, you know what? Let's reserve the number seven just for the dominant. So for major sevenths, we use the triangle, which is used in jazz. However, again, they also couple the number seven. So we drop the number seven, we drop the MA, and we just have C with a triangle. Now here's the part that no one ever came up with. The upside down triangle for minor seventh. Very simple. Now, here's the killer. Here's the symbol that when I got this symbol, I said, I think I'm onto something. When I combine both triangles and put them together, it forms a double X. And that would represent the minor major seventh chord, which is the one chord in melodic and harmonic minor. And it represents it. So I have all the chords of the sevens have unique symbology that are very simplified. Okay, so now you apply this to jazz symbology, and you can simplify for educational purposes. However, you have to realize that we have a history of these symbols that have developed, and they're good symbols. However, why would we have, you know, a very complicated symbol when we can have very shorthand symbology that really means something? of course, it's an educational process that has to start with the young people and then move forward. And as we discussed earlier, no one likes change. As a matter of fact, I was demonstrating some of this at the Jazz J-E-N conference in Louisville last January. And one gentleman came up to me and said, well, what are we supposed to do, change all the symbols in the real book? You know, I said, eventually, yes.
Oh, well, I'm sure it's the same thing that people who, you know, were playing guitar started with tabs and things like that. I'm sure that there was some sort of, you know, anti-movement when that came about. So do you actually write your own compositions in that notation?
Absolutely, and I use it in composing. It's a shorthand that really works. I mean, you have to remember, shorthand has been around since the figured bass. That's what they used. That's what the Baroque people used. And jazz musicians are comparable to Baroque musicians in terms of using chord symbols to improvise. It's a shorthand. So if we can perfect this shorthand, in terms of, like, you know, I noticed a lot of the pianists in jazz bands in high school level and also in college level, they can't really read these chord symbols, their chord symbols, that, you know, the regular ones that are being used. So they're all, usually the voicings are written out in the jazz band charts. So, you know, I'm hoping that my symbols give you the exact voicing, actually, to play. And I use it with a compound symbol. So there's a symbol on top and a symbol below showing what the left hand does and then what the right hand does. So they're actually precise voicings. So they don't require being written out once you learn the system.
Getting back to Essence of Green, you actually worked with a lot of, you know, pretty great musicians here. Jimmy Cobb, Rodney Whittaker, Derek Gardner, Diego Rivera.
Well, not so much working with them, I have to tell you. When we went into the recording studio to do this, you have to remember Jimmy Cobb was on site. So everybody was on their best behavior. And they were all inspired, I think. And what I tried to do with Essence of Green was what Miles Davis did with Kind of Blue, had very precise arrangements. Now, of course, mine weren't, an arrangement is like a roadmap. So the more exact you can have it, the better results you're going to get from, you know, from the performer. So I had my roadmap, I had everybody's chart, and we played it basically once through before we recorded it. So there was no rehearsals. And that's what I was trying to capture, the spirit of Kind of Blue, where they got together and they just did this music. So I think it succeeded in that. I'm very pleased with the way the musicians played. And of course, having Jimmy Cobb was just the icing on the cake. When I called Jimmy and told him what I was doing, he wasn't sure, you know, because, I mean, he really didn't know me, you know. And, I mean, our paths crossed in New York when I was playing there, but I don't know if he remembered me. Maybe he did in the back of his mind, because when I called him again a week later, he said he'd come out and do it. So that's how we got him out here.